ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
Hello, Tom Robinson here. Welcome to the program. Matt Brand's in the VRD today. I'm on the microphone. We'll hear from Matt later today before 1:30. Thanks for tuning in. We're broadcasting right across the Northern Territory today on ABC Radio and online via ABC Listen. In the next hour or so, we're going to go to the most isolated poultry farm in the world, probably, to see how they're feeling about bird flu.
Yeah, we have thought about that a lot. We sort of definitely want to keep the birds as a free-range operation, so if it had to be having the animals contained, I'm not really quite sure how we'd go about that.
We're also going to get an update on what the government's thinking and planning on backpacker visas. You would have heard some of our reporting on this issue yesterday in the lead up to mango season. We'll bring you an update in the next 10-15 minutes. But first, I need to tell you about the fire ban that's in place today. Due to fire risk, Bushfires NT have issued a fire ban for the Darwin and Adelaide River areas. During the fire ban, no person shall light a fire or cause a fire to be lit in the open. This is due to hazardous fire weather conditions that are predicted in this area. Fire ban applies for 24 hours from midnight this morning to midnight tonight. Andrew Thomas from Bushfires NT was on ABC Radio earlier today to explain the situation.
Put a type of fire ban in place, which means that there isn't any lighting of any fires in the open in those areas. Also, too, we're asking people to really be mindful of about undertaking any activity that might be outside that can cause a spark. So, particularly, you know, those industry or people working out in areas of outside, make sure that they're being really mindful of what they are doing, not to start anything. We know that the conditions today with humidity, rain, weather, wind, and fuel load. Means that if a fire does start, it's likely to spread quickly and build in intensity quickly. So we've got our systems in place and our staff and volunteers are there and able to respond. And we've obviously got all of those things in place. But we are asking community that if you do see any smoke or any fires start today, please make sure you call through 000 and please report them so that we can respond as quickly as we can to try and get them under control.
Andrew Thomas from Bushfires NT on ABC Radio earlier today. Just to repeat, there's a fire ban for Darwin and Adelaide River districts today. For more details, visit the Secure NT or Bushfires NT websites. And speaking of bushfires, the National Bushfire Outlook for spring, or the build-up in this part of the world, has been released. It shows that most of Australia, including the Territory, is at higher risk of bushfires for this spring. We'll bring you the details on that in the next half an hour.
Well, I'm Roger Steele, and I've been droving a heck of a lot, more times than I really wanted to. I've been with rushing cattle, I've been through the Murrinjay on four occasions. I enjoyed it so much, I got into Parliament later to get away from the cattle. I was the Minister for Primary Industry on the very first occasion, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
Tom Robinson with you on The Country Hour this afternoon. Matt Brand's away, but we're going to hear from him out at the Kidman Springs Field Day after 1 o'clock. Let's talk about backpackers. Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke says the government is slowing down the processing of new working holiday visa applications. You might have caught this on The Country Hour yesterday. This is happening as the government works through changes to Australia's migration system. Here's what he had to say.
At the moment, the processing of working holiday visas at the moment, they are still being processed, but they are being processed more slowly than they were previously.
What sort of an effect is that going to have on the agricultural industry?
The principal visa for the agricultural industry is actually PALM, the Pacific Workers Scheme. One of the things that happened when we started to improve the worker protections on PALM was, not overwhelmingly, but some of the worst operators said, well, if we've got to have better standards for PALM workers, we'll just switch to backpackers. And that's not the way this system's meant to work.
Are we talking weeks or months before you land the migration policy?
We're talking about a cabinet crisis.
Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke speaking to the media about the slowing down of the processing of backpacker visas. Marie Piccone from Manbaloo Mangoes in the Katherine region says this is bad news to get just before the harvest.
It's another difficulty for us trying to juggle getting a workforce together for our fairly intense mango season. And we need a base level that we can call on. You know, we're already sort of engaging some of them after having locked in our palm scheme workers. So we just don't want numbers to dwindle, and we don't want to be competing with a whole lot of other primary producers because, you know, we all need them. And I think is it really very responsible of the federal government to do this without consultation?
Marie Piccone from Manbaloo Mangoes. So there was a lot of thoughts about this on the text line yesterday. One of them from Alan said, mangoes about to crop and the feds are messing about with imported labour. Where's Luke Gosling? He's meant to represent us Territorians. We never hear anything from our special envoy. Speak up, Luke, so we can hear what you're doing to help. So we spoke to the member for Solomon, Luke Gosling, and we asked him whether he would take these concerns about backpacker visas all the way down to Canberra.
Well, I am, and have this morning met with the staff from Tony Burke's office, and obviously Tony's a colleague of mine, and we'll speak with him when I get the next opportunity. It is. I understand the concern of the mango growers, but also other industries that utilise backpackers. They're really important to our territory agriculture, particularly around harvest time. But there are loads of backpackers currently in the country. So in the short term, there's not grounds for too much concern. But because the processing is still continuing, but what we're flagging is that it will be slowing down. Of course, other farms have palm workers, which has been very successful. And there's a variety of ways that that companies in the ag sector in the territory can get their workforce. But I've certainly raised it.
The palm scheme is an important part of farmers getting their workforce, but it's my understanding that the backpackers play a really important role in sort of surge capacity because it's a more flexible system and there's more bureaucracy with the palm scheme. These migration settings are being reviewed. Is there a chance that we will see less backpackers, say, this time next year? Is this going to be a problem into the future?
Yeah, well, that's the concern that I've flagged, the concern for the future. And I've always got a good hearing from our ministers. And as I said, I've already met with them to get a briefing and to hear what the plan is. They've assured me that processing will still continue. But importantly, that there's like heaps of backpackers in Australia that if they are to get extended on their working holiday, they need to do 88 days in the territory. Or another regional area. So there's a big workforce there that can surge during those picking times, and I'll be doing everything I can with my colleagues, Marion Scrimgeour and Melandiri McCarthy, to make sure that territory farmers get the best possible setup that they can. And obviously palm scheme is available to them. So I think the complementarity of those two programs will continue to work well. And we're on the case down here in Canberra.
We're seeing similar messages from the agriculture sector in other states. And honestly, businesses in other sectors also say they need backpackers, just hospitality as an example. This is sort of happening as there's a broader political discussion about migration to Australia. And as we've been saying, the government is reviewing the current migration settings. I wonder, do you think too much change is going to damage regional economies more broadly?
Well, that's obviously my concern for the Northern Territory. But our unique circumstances and the fact that we want more people, not less people, is well understood, whether it's international students, which make up the most or the largest percentage of the net overseas migration number, or the working holiday makers, which is the second largest cohort of people coming from overseas. We want more of both. more international students and more working holiday makers. So there's the ability to take that into account at the federal level, and that's what I'll continue to advocate for. And other regional MPs obviously will be doing the same thing, because the stresses for us are different than they are down south. Doesn't mean we don't need more accommodation. Obviously, we do need more accommodation. That's why the federal government's funding more international student accommodation for Darwin, as an example. But we do want to see more international students. That's why we're helping in CDU. We do want to see more working holiday makers and palm workers in the territory, so we can grow our agricultural sector. And that's what I'll continue to push for. Any reduction in the territory of workforce is not going to be good, and I've made that point clear to the various ministers that have responsibility in this area.
Given the public pressure and discourse on Tony Burke and the federal government on migration in Australia, do you think they'll be able to take your feedback on board and take it seriously?
Yeah, I do. I have good relationships with our ministers, and obviously Malandiri McCarthy, the NT senator, is a minister, so she can talk with her colleagues, including through the cabinet process where the decisions are made in relation to this issue and all the other issues that that go through the cabinet process. So that's the good news, is that we've got voices down here that are listened to. You got to remember that the Prime Minister himself has been to the territory 19 times, including to regional areas of the territory, since he's been the Prime Minister. So he understands the territory, understands the things that that we need in order to, fulfil that potential that everyone always talks about, the potential of the territory, but we need more workforce.
Member for Solomon, Luke Gosling, speaking to me earlier.
Bludging on the blind side.
If we truly are a sporting nation, then we need a section in the census about our sporting interests and affiliations.
Why is this?
I know.
Ryan HG.
Surely a write-in campaign would draw the attention of organisers to the need for these questions, and maybe you mark it up yourself.
Or just up the top of it, I love Manly, Foz is doing a great job.
And I get all my rugby league from Bludging on the
Blind Side.
Ryan HG.
Saturday from 12 on ABC Listen.
Tom Robinson with you on the Northern Territory Country Hour this afternoon. Just a reminder, spoke about it earlier, there's a fire ban for the Darwin and Adelaide River areas today. It comes as the Australasian Fire Authorities Council has released the National Bushfire Outlook for Spring, or the build-up as we'd call it, in the territory. Bushfire risk has increased for most states and territories, but the NT does really stand out here, so they put out a map with this outlook. And there's a big red blob on the Northern Territory, and this indicates increased risk of fire. This blob goes from up near Timber Creek down to the South Australia border, east to Queensland, and west to WA. It covers pretty much all of the Barkly and Central Australia. For the top end, the forecast says the wet season should begin later than average this year, which would extend the bushfire season into November, and the peak danger period being September and October. Rowan Fisher from the North Australian and Rangelands Fire Information Service joins me. Rowan, how do we interpret this? Should we be worried?
Well, what we've seen is a series of quite wet years across that arid, semi-arid zone of the NT. And when you get lots of rain, you do get lots of fuel. So, I mean, it is fairly indicative of increased fuel loads and, going into September, October, which is really the big fire season in the territory, we will have severe fire weather, and there is definitely increased risk of some very large fire events. I guess the only sort of note is that, particularly across the Tanami, we have seen big fires over the last couple of years, big fires last year, which would have dramatically decreased the fuel load, particularly in the Tanami. So there'll be some, variability within those landscapes around the extent of those fires. But I just say it, with regards to the those national scale fire risk maps, they can look really quite scary, but they are really broad scale, and they're sort of general indicators of risk across very, very large areas, but don't necessarily need to freak people out about particular risks to their communities. I think generally work is being done around where people live to try and mitigate those risks.
And this is all to do with fuel loads, I guess?
Well, yeah, primarily fuel loads, because we do get severe fire weather conditions across that country every single year. It's just the nature of the environment, really. It gets really hot and dry, and particularly moving through to October, November, we start to get those early build-up storms moving down through some of that desert country, and we get lightning strike ignitions, which are another big factor that sets off those fires. Absolutely, it is a concern.
It's obviously a really big part of the territory that is included on this map. Is there a particular region or smaller location that you would be particularly concerned about?
Well, I mean, the primary concern, if you're looking at impact to sort of property and people, would be around Tennant Creek. And I know Bushfires NT and the authorities are already doing some fuel reduction burns around Tennant Creek. We had those 2023 fires there, which were a real warning about the scale and the risk that those fires represent. Moving down towards Alice Springs, I guess you've got the increased fuel loads due to buffel grass creating those sort of big contiguous fuel load landscapes. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens down there as well. We did see a fire quite recently or last week that moved towards Granite Mines and the Tanami. But that was quite early in the year. But I don't think the mine was particularly affected by that one.
Yeah, you were posting about this fire in the Tanami on social media. Can you tell us what was happening out there?
So it was a large fire, over 400,000 hectares, that burnt over the majority of last week. I think it's subsided now, but it was just the scale of it and being so early in the year. It wanted to highlight that because it does indicate the risk that we're going into, particularly as conditions get more extreme, as I said, moving into September, October.
And there were the Granite's mine you mentioned, but so there was no sort of communities impacted by this fire you've mentioned?
No, it was fairly remote, and as far as I'm aware, no, there wasn't.
Rowan, you're actually at the Australasian Fire Authorities Council conference today in Melbourne. What's happening down there?
So there are fire and emergency services agencies from across Australia. I'm in the sort of vendors section with Charles Darwin University, and we're talking about disaster risk and humanitarian courses, and I've got some fire simulation work that I've developed that is being used across Australia to support training and community engagement. So sort of showing that off, one of my 3D tactile fire simulation applications. So a lot of interest in the work from the NT at a national level here.
Rowan Fisher from the North Australian Rangelands Fire Information Service speaking to me about the national bushfire outlook for the next few months over that spring or build-up period. Bushfire risk has increased for most states and territories, particularly in the Northern Territory. We'll bring you more on that outlook and how the authorities are preparing on ABC Radio throughout today.
Hi, I'm Verity. I'm a licensed aircraft engineer here in the Territory, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
The livestock industry has put together a 10-year plan for the live cattle industry. The plan is meant to provide a clear vision for live cattle export until the year 2035. Chief Executive of the Australian Livestock Exporters Council, Mark Harvey Sutton, spoke to Crispian Yeomans about this plan. He says it will drive stronger industry and stronger confidence.
What it basically means is that for the first time, we've got the whole live cattle export supply chain coming behind a single plan. And very pleasingly, Crispian, yesterday, Minister Collins, the Agriculture Minister, welcomed the development of the plan and reinforced the fact that the Albanese government is a big supporter of live cattle exports. So that's really important.
What does this plan mean for me if I'm a producer on the ground practically? Because I noticed that there are some ideas on where we want the industry to go, but what does that actually mean for a producer?
Well, there's a couple of angles to that. I suppose the ultimate goal of the plan is to instill a bit of confidence and certainty. That is the objective. But should we be able to implement the plan, which I'm very confident we will, down the track, what we're hoping for is more efficient supply chains, the ability to actually send cattle to more markets, and hopefully more cattle going on live export boats. So there's a lot of opportunity there, but also a lot of work to be done to build the trade beyond what it is now.
Right. Which markets would you be really keen to tap into?
Well, Indonesia is always our main focus. I mean, we send 500,000 cattle up there every year. It's our number one market and always will be. So we can't lose sight of that. But there are many Southeast Asian countries that are looking to build their food security. This year, we've seen both Turkey and Mexico become prominent markets for dairy cattle. So there's a lot of opportunity there. But, you know, I couldn't rule out even countries like the US looking to take our cattle if everything pans out the way we'd like it to. So at the end of the day, I think the key thing is we're underpinning people's food security in these markets, and I think that's something that will be very enduring and not something that's going to stop overnight.
Thinking about that live cattle export ban in 2011, can you give any confidence to our industry at the moment who are concerned that that could happen again?
Oh, well, yesterday the minister was unequivocal, forcing the Albanese government support for live cattle, and we believe that. I think that we were very fortunate last year to have Minister Collins come up to Indonesia. She went and had a look at a cattle feedlot there. She's also been very good at engaging with the industry. I don't think the Albanese government has its sights set on cattle at all, but I suppose it's plans like this, Crispian, that help us make sure that that's the case. The fact that we can demonstrate we've got a united industry and that we are working together and we are keen to engage with government, they're very important things to do. So that's what we're going to keep doing.
Chief Executive of the Australian Livestock Exporters Council, Mark Harvey Sutton, speaking to Crispian Yeomans about their 10-year plan for the live cattle trade.
Nightlife with Philip Clark.
Informed, not overwhelmed.
The bill doesn't ban gambling. It doesn't restrict anybody's right to gamble at all.
Beyond the headlines.
How about this story? An AI system was asked to do something as simple as bookend gym class, but it decided to go rogue.
Fun conversations.
Just continue to get better and live forever.
Thank you. I'm going to have that as a goal trip. I can't afford to live forever. I haven't got enough cash.
Nightlife with Philip Clark.
Monday to Thursday from 10.
On ABC Local Radio.
Tom Robinson with you on the Northern Territory Country Hour. Just quickly, before we go to the 1 o'clock news, another 27 kilometres of the Plenty Highway has been sealed, with 155 k's of the 499-kilometre highway now sealed dual lanes. Javoy Station Manager Kaya Gill spoke to ABC Rural about what this means for their station in the area.
Oh, it's been lovely. I mean, one of the sort of soft benefits has been the children have really enjoyed riding their bike on Bitumen Road. So it's really nice having a bit of a skate park out the front of Jervois for the kids. But in terms of traffic and tourists, it means safer access for staff and people travelling on the road. It means less wear and tear on vehicles and all of those things that come with wet weather and access as well.
Mm. Has it mean better access to maybe different parts of your station as well?
Look, along with sealing the 27 k's of the Plenty Highway, they've also sealed into the Bonya community, which is an additional 16 kilometres off the road. So it actually means that staff and people in our area, like for us, we could travel to Bonya community to see nurses and get services all on Bitumen Road, which is very much a luxury.
For the rest of the Plenty Highway, because it is still only the 27 k's of a 499-kilometre highway. It's a very small section of it. How's the dirt looking right now around where you are on the Plenty Highway?
Look, this time of year it is pretty rough. I believe the graders came across in May and they haven't been back. Fink weekend is a lot of traffic on the road, which really cuts it up. And then over July, we received about 60 mil of rain, which also cut it up a lot. So the road is looking pretty average, but it's certainly hard and dry and passable now. It's just rough.
It's obviously been a bit of a unique amount of winter rain here in Central Australia this year. Is it maybe a bit more cut up than it would be usually?
Yes, to have those winter rains is unusual, so it certainly is a little bit more cut up than what it normally is. But being farmers, we love rain. It's a great asset, and the grass is growing, the cows are fat, and the flowers are starting to come through.
Trevoise Station Manager Kaya Gill speaking to Charles Geary about the situation there out on the Plenty Highway. Trevoise is about a 350k drive northeast of Alice Springs. We'll go to the newsroom very soon for the 1 o'clock bulletin. We'll hear from Matt Brann out at Kidman Springs after the weather. Tom Robinson with you on the Country Hour. I'll send you to the newsroom and I'll talk to you later.
G'day, my name's Brody Woody and from Oklahoma, but I'm down under right now and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Tom Robinson with you on the Country Hour this afternoon. Good to be with you. Thanks for listening. In the next half hour, I want to take you to what could be the most remote poultry operation in the world. Certainly one of the most remote I can think of. We'll check in to see how they're feeling about the bird flu situation.
Yeah, we have thought about that a lot. We sort of definitely want to keep the birds as a free-range operation. So if it had to be having the animals contained, I'm not really quite sure how we'd go about that.
You've probably realised I'm also not Matt Brann. Matt is in the VRD and we're going to check in with what he's been up to as well. First, we'll speak to the Weather Bureau. I've got Hannah Whiteside on the line. How are you doing, Hannah?
I'm well, thank you.
That is good. What's happening in the weather? A bit of rain down near Alice, I think.
Yeah, that's it. That's the main story for the next few days. We've got that cloud band that's been moving over the southern districts since about yesterday. There are some storms overnight about the eastern Lassiter moving across into the Simpson district into the early morning. And then those storms have cleared off, but we've still got some rain about for most of today, pretty much in the Simpson district and predominantly towards the western side of that. Yesterday, up to 9 a.m. this morning, we saw 14 millimetres at Collier Creek, 9 millimetres at Upper Bond Springs, 6.5 at Wiggly Gorge, 5.8 millimetres at Alice Springs Airport. A decent drop down there. Less in the gauges since 9 a.m. We've only had a millimetre at Upper Bond Springs. Those showers are continuing and will likely do so for the next few days as we've got a series of troughs moving over the area.
Okay. And that's continuing into the weekend?
Yeah, it will do. So there is a chance of storms about the Lassiter district, about the south generally tomorrow, and then in the Lassiter district for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, even Monday. The chance of thunderstorms and definitely some rainfall right across the south all the way into early next week.
Okay. And what's the go further north in the top end today and looking ahead?
Yeah, much clearer skies about the north. There's only a whisper of some clouds over in the eastern Arnhem district at the moment. We've got some stronger easterly winds with that ridge sort of up the east coast of the country directing those fresher winds about the north at the moment. So that has increased the fire danger ratings as well. We've got a fire weather warning out for the Darwin-Adelaide River region today with those fresher winds, the warm temperatures, and a little bit of dry air mixing down as well.
Okay. And of course, there's that fire ban in place for that area, the Darwin-Adelaide River districts put in place by Bushfires NT due to the, those hazardous weather conditions that you're talking about, Hannah. Are they going to will they continue in the coming days, the hot temperatures and windy conditions?
It will for tomorrow as well. So the fire danger ratings, we've got a high rating at the moment for tomorrow around the Darwin-Adelaide River area. So the winds are slightly less than today. That's the reason it hasn't gone into extreme yet. But, yeah, likely to be those higher end of the fire danger ratings with the winds continuing and the warm temperatures, at least for tomorrow.
Okay. And then maybe cooling down towards the back end of the week?
Temperatures won't really drop so much. It's just that the winds will start to ease back a little bit as that ridge weakens.
Okay. Hannah, thank you. Anything else you think we need to know?
I think that about covers it. Thank you.
Thank you. Hannah Whiteside at the Weather Bureau.
It's important to share my story because it's more like an untold perspective.
My story's unique.
Haywire is the ABC's true story competition for regional young people.
From Pambier.
From Ardeerland.
From Rockhampton.
From Narrogin.
Haywire is a chance to
tell our stories on a national platform.
Go to Canberra, go out, make change.
And be heard.
So if you know a young person with a cracking story, tell them to enter Haywire by September 1st.
abc.net.au/Haywire. Let's head out now to the Victoria River District. There's a field day held at the famous Kidman Springs Station. Now, all going well, the internet gods are agreeable, and Matt Brand is on the line right now. How's it going?
I am well, thanks, Tom. Yeah, we've got every Starlink and the VRD hooked up here, so hopefully I can stay with you this afternoon. It's been a good day here at the famous Kidman Springs, mate. They've got about 100 people here for a two-day field day, which is a really good effort at this time of the year. And, yeah, the crowd have spent most of the morning in the shed, what we call the VRD classroom. And after a bit of lunch here, everyone will be heading out into the paddocks later on to see the various trials that are happening out here in the heart of the VRD. So that'll be good fun.
Excellent. Good to hear. I can hear a bit of activity in the background. Some machinery.
Yeah, well, I think that's the Jenny, just keeping things running for those who might need to wash their vehicle before heading out into the paddocks. Lunch has been served. I think they're expecting a top of sort of 35, 36 degrees out here this afternoon, so it might be a tad warm out in the paddock, you maybe hear a little bit of wind starting to creep in as well out here, which is nice.
Hopefully a bit of a breeze for you. What's the discussion points at the field day today?
Yeah, well, already we've covered so many different topics out here at Kidman this morning. The Minister for Ag, Jared Maley, he's swung by as well to say a few words. There was a fantastic panel session actually just before lunch involving a number of cattle stations. There was Connie Wood from Wave Hill. There was Jake Hicks from Avern and Margot Guga from Cave Creek Station near Mataranka. And it was just a great conversation about people, how to find good people to work on cattle stations, how to keep them there, how to make them, you know, do well, not just for your business, but for the Northern Territory, and just creating a great community on cattle stations and making people feel appreciated. How do you get people to come and work for you when the mines are offering oodles of road? It was, a really good conversation and lots of...
We may have lost Matt Brand there. He's out at the Kidman Springs Field Day in the Victoria River District. As you can imagine, the internet infrastructure out there is, well, it's probably stretched at the best of times, and they've had 100 people descend on the area. And even with all the Starlink technology available, I'm guessing that it's been stretched too thin. But good to hear from Matt Brand there. All going well. We will broadcast from Kidman Springs tomorrow. Hopefully that all goes according to plan, and we'll hear a bit more about what everyone's been discussing and what they've been learning there at the field day. I'm told something that did come up was bird flu, of all things. H5 bird flu, of course, has arrived in Australia. It's spread to, well, basically every state and territory across our nation. It's got people in poultry concerned. It's got people in the wildlife sector and environmental fields concerned. But it's actually also a discussion point in the cattle industry. And I'm told that at this field day, they were talking about bird flu. Matt Brand spoke to a vet, Storm Skeppers, about why bird flu would be coming up at a field day focused on cattle.
With the pastoral community, I would say that they don't need to worry too much about bird flu in the sense of it affecting production. What I would say that they do need to worry about is, if we have multiple bird deaths and, they're in the troughs or the water sources, to make sure that we are cleaning that up and keeping that good, because the risk of botulism is still there. So the risk is low. There is no real evidence that, even if an animal does pick up bird flu, that it can be transmitted from animal to animal. If anything, maybe there would be a slight reduction in productivity, but it's not something that I want the producers to worry about with regards to cattle.
If one of these remote stations comes across a paddock full of dead birds, what should they do?
Yeah, so the first thing would be PPE, and that's all on our website with regards to information regarding the bird flu. So that's basically just, protective gloves, mask, boots that would, or closed shoes that would be able to disinfect. And then just to double bag those birds and, that it can just go straight into the normal trash or garbage. And in some situations where there's no risk of scavengers or other animals coming into contact with those birds, you can just leave them in the environment to decompose on their own.
And as a vet, Storm, how much is this starting to, fill your mind and your thoughts, the prospect of bird flu in the Northern Territory?
Yeah, well, it is coming. It is coming. And it's, I guess we're fortunate up here in the Northern Territory. We don't have a big poultry industry, but it's our wild birds that are going to be affected. And we don't quite know how or, how many numbers or when it's coming. But, yeah, it is coming. And our team, Livestock Biosecurity, we've been so busy, drawing up plans, contingency plans, so that we are ready for when it does come.
Storm Skepper at the Kidman Springs Field Day speaking to Matt Brann about how bird flu actually is a discussion point and a learning point for people in the cattle trade as well. We were speaking to Matt earlier over the power of the internet, and we had a few, they dropped out. There's probably a lot of strains, 100 people that descended on the Kidman Springs Field Day, and everyone wants their slice of the internet. We'll give another go. Matt, are you there? No, we've not got him. Oh, well. As I say, we are hoping to broadcast from said Kidman Springs Field Day tomorrow on the Northern Territory Country Hour. We'll see how we go.
You'll find barrow loads of gardening goodness in the September issue of Gardening Australia. Explore the best plants for long-lasting blooms, visit a native garden, and tour a tropical backyard. There's expert help for your roses and indoor plants, advice on replenishing your soil, plus tips on growing passion fruit, water chestnut and spring veg. Gardening Australia, from newsagents and abcmagazines.com.au.
Tom Robinson with you on the Northern Territory Country Hour this afternoon, where it's just about to go 22 minutes past one. On the program for weeks now, we've been talking about Australia's response to the outbreak of H5 bird flu. And I was wondering how one of the most isolated egg producers in the world might be thinking about it. This producer is called Gemma Cripps. She lives out on Gabion Station in WA. This is like 530 km north of Perth. It's cattle country, inland of Geraldton out there. She owns 150 hens in a commercial poultry operation. Joe Prendergast from the ABC went to check it out.
You must be one of the most remote egg producers in the state. Here at Yalgoo, you're on a station. Don't think there's many other setups like this.
No, I'm not. I don't know of any other stations that have got chooks on this level. So, yeah, possibly.
Do you think when you look at the egg industry and the obvious threat is bird flu being found in the state, it's not in any commercial egg facilities, but it is in the state. How have you thought about that and what you're doing here?
Yeah, we have thought about that a lot. And hopefully with our remote location, we are far enough away from the threat that, yeah, hopefully we'll be okay. We sort of definitely want to keep the birds as a free range operation. So if it had to be having the animals contained, I'm not really quite sure how we'd go about that. So hopefully our remote location will keep us okay.
And you are registered as a commercial egg producer.
Yep.
How much information has there been flowing from government about bird flu, what to do, what would happen if it is found in a flock?
We're sort of getting updates every time there's a new case that's been discovered. So, and there's been a lot of online forums in the past couple of weeks on all the issues relating to the egg industry and the birds. So, they have been very good.
Do you know what would happen? Like, would you get a housing order or something like that?
Yeah, that's possibly what they are looking at, is the housing orders. Unfortunately for us here, that probably, to make that happen would be very difficult. So, our quarantine procedure at the moment would probably be having to cull the chickens. Yep. It's just to try and create housing for birds out here is completely against what we're trying to do, so it wouldn't really achieve anything. But, keeping the animals safe for a small amount of time could be possible, but it just depends how that housing order looks.
Are you recognised as more protected because you are geographically isolated? I imagine there's not too many seabirds cruising around here.
That's what they are staying at the moment because, of where we are, off the coast by sort of 100 k's, they're saying is the first barrier.
And so, you're about what, 250?
It would be 200. As to the ocean would be about 200 from here. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that will be enough.
Do you flip that and go, well, this is an opportunity to expand and have more chickens?
Yeah, well, it possibly could be. As this sort of goes along, having the ability to sort of hatch and breed our own chickens now, it's something that we could definitely sort of keep going ahead with further. But, it's just making sure that you have got the markets for those eggs too. There's definitely a cost to running the chickens out here because of freight and getting your feed here. So the return's got to be there also.
Gemma Cripps from Gabion Station in WA, having a chat among the chickens there with Joe Prendergast. Thanks for your time. I'll send you to the Arvos program.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.